CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm here with a number of co-hosts today. We're going to jump right into the existential dread because it's real. Because time is ticking down in my personal life and for this conversation. So let's get started. This week on the Existentialism miniseries, we're going to look at what makes humans humans. Not just the ability to think and to share ideas, but also to form relationships and journey together. Up to this point in the series, we have had discussions of being and individual experience. And we have even ventured into Martin Buber's work to talk about how relationship and understanding is necessary to actually go through the journey of introspection and find your sense of ultimate meaning and purpose as you journey through the world. But today, we take a step into the dynamic of interpersonal relationship. We're stepping out of the realm of abstraction and into the applicable, into the personal. And so with that in mind, I will be drawing from Hugh Laffalette's text that is quite literally entitled Personal Relationships. So, in order to understand how personal relationships fit in to an existentialist framework, because, as Jean-Paul Sartre would say, the existentialist worldview is very lonely. He would put out three kind of states: that human beings are forlorn, they are alone, and they are in despair. Heidegger would echo this point to talk about the struggle of Dasein, of being in a relationship, because that could cause ensnarement. However, I think Hugh Laffalette gives us solid grounding to understand relationships as a necessary component of existential thought and actually living out the existential, dare I say, lifestyle. that you are searching for meaning, you are deriving meaning from the unknown, and you seek to find fulfillment in that. So what do I mean by that exactly? I mean that even the strongest of existentialists cannot deny the fact that we are naturally born into relationships of necessity. Hugh Laffalette would call that relationship an impersonal relationship, or some might say it's a relationship of necessity. That the relationship you have with the person bagging your groceries is nothing more than a necessary one to get a task accomplished, and you leave the grocery store and you go on with life. But there are also relationships that are personal, but they're because of circumstances. Hugh Laffalette talks about in the book, he talks about if you're carpooling with your coworker to your job, you may have a bit of chit-chat back and forth to talk about, to talk about the Canucks game, to talk about, what you got to get accomplished at work. You may even talk about your prospective family life. But you're not really choosing them as an individual to invest in. It's just basically they're there, and you don't want to be the social weirdo who doesn't talk to anyone on that half an hour drive. So then you run into personal relationships, but particular close personal relationships. The people that you choose to be with, you choose to spend time with, and in Heideggerian terms, the person whose world you desire to step into and to discover. With that being said, let me reformulate my thoughts and then give it to my colleagues for demolishment of my thought process. But the point of this episode is to understand personal relationships, even close personal relationships, are not in conflict with existential ideals. In fact, they're necessary and sometimes they can help enhance the existential process, the process of introspection. And let's turn it over to my colleagues and see what they have to say, whether they agree with me or not. The floor is open.
Yeah, I can hop in here right away and say that I am unconvinced, and I would like to hear a little more about Lathalette's perspective. I haven't read this piece, I have to admit, but I do want to hear a little bit more about that perspective and how you take that perspective, Tegan, because almost every other existentialism that I've encountered and that we've talked about on this show put into focus, I mean, the whole point of the school of thought is to put into focus the individual, right? Yourself, who you are as a being, how you interact with the world, and to bring forward this perspective that each life, each perspective, each way of being is unique and different. And for some existentialists, for many existentialists, that's just automatically or inherently, let's say, sets you apart from all other perspectives on being and experiences in being. And so I think if you go far enough into the existentialist framework, you actually lose the capacity, or you lose the desire even, to engage with other people on the deeper level that you're talking about, which I think it could be equally destructive if you lose the desire as if you lose the capability. So I remain unconvinced, but I'm curious to hear what other people have to say. I also just want to clarify before you respond, Tegan, that I mean specifically the really deep personal relationships, because of course I'm not denying that every day you go out and interact with people, like you said, the grocery store, the person bagging your items, it's a kind of relationship, a transactional one, but I mean specifically the close personal ones. But of course that will be the focus, I imagine, but I just wanted to clarify that that's what I'm referring to.
So can an existentialist have a close personal relationship with someone who is not an existentialist? Well, existentialist is not a, well, it is a label, but it should be viewed as a mindset. So really what we're saying is, can someone who is looking to pursue and find meaning and purpose through everyday experience be in relationship to someone who is not necessarily aware and united on that same pathway? I think the answer is yes, but I think it's difficult. The answer is yes, because as long as one does not abandon their individual pursuit in order to fit that person's expectation, I think that there is some possibility there. I think that in that relational dynamic, you're actually given more opportunities to explore how other people find meaning and purpose, or actually to strengthen your resolve to find meaning and purpose within yourself. I think it's important to note, I don't believe that Lathalette himself would ever identify as an existentialist. So I'm reading Lathalette and injecting existential thought and themes into his work. For Lathalette, one of the biggest things to realize is that Lathalette is concerned primarily with understanding the story of the person you are in relationship to. It's not this abstract set of traits that you enjoy. For example, if Aaron and I are hanging out and Aaron's hilarious and he makes me laugh or whatever, right? That's great. But there's a lot of funny people in the world. That's true. So if I'm looking to be in a personal relationship with Aaron because he's funny, that's not a close personal relationship. That's what we would call a relationship of convenience. The relationship is meeting the need to have a friend who is humorous. But what makes Aaron and I's friendship a close personal one is the fact that although Aaron is hilarious, I understand who he is as a person within his experience. And I choose to spend time with him. Hugh Laffalette uses the example of Sarah and Samantha. If Samantha is just funny, kind, compassionate, all those things, there's plenty of people that match the description. But if Sarah realizes who Samantha is and takes time to uncover the phenomenon of her being in her experience and her outlook on life, that's what makes it's the act of dwelling, it's the act of discovery that makes that relationship valuable. And so, to Mihai's point, a lot of the thinkers that we've talked about, Heidegger, Sartre, Kierkegaard, all those guys, make a very clear description that the existential journey is one that is journeyed alone. But it is also true that Heidegger would say, you must first find your place in the they to then step out and find your place as the I. You must first find meaning and purpose within relation to others before you can step out and individualize. And further to that, I would say the existentialist will always be in a pattern of personal relationships because that helps to uncover another aspect of one's very own being. The reason people... Right. What you observe most often in couples that have, you know, been married a long time or whatever, is the sense of these are two people that are constantly working to get to know each other more intimately day by day through shared experience. And if the existentialist can learn to value not only shared experience, but then take that shared experience and ask this one question. How has this changed me and why? I think you're off to a good start. It's when the existentialist stops asking those questions that we run into problems and so on. As Mihai, go ahead.
On a sort of practical note, I mean, that all makes sense to me. There is, of course, a sense in which you learn from others and you improve yourself, or you learn more about yourself at least. And that's a lot of the reason we have personal relationships. So that all makes sense. But imagine, to Aaron's point about the question we left on, that you're someone who is very interested in that kind of knowledge seeking, and the person that and the people around you with whom you could choose to form close personal relationships, imagine that they're all people that have no interest in that kind of self-reflection or that kind of gaining knowledge about oneself and about the people around them. You would get bored. And if not bored, bored is the best case scenario, I would say. The worst case is that you somehow feel alienated from this group because of your different outlook. And I think So I think that's where the problem comes, practically speaking, between the person that takes on the existentialist view, trying to make relationships with people that don't share that view, that passion for that kind of knowledge seeking, is that those relationships have a risk of breaking apart, and taken sort of to the extreme, it means the further you go into learning about yourself and individuating yourself from the group, the less you want to engage with the group, which is, I think, what you see in a lot of writings of previous authors that we've talked about, like Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, so on.
I can see where you're coming from, Aaron, but as soon as you say that you're going to get bored of the people around you, makes me feel like that is a personal issue and not because or an effect of the people around you because of their interests. Like, I think it comes from like an introspection of being humble, whether or not you have the same thought process or outlook on life. Because even if you're not able to share an experience vocally, but by thought, you can still learn by observing their choices in life and keeping some of your own opinions to yourself that you know could be triggering to them. So if anything, I feel like that actually grows you more as a person by challenging yourself to be around the types of people that are so-called boring.
Now, in defense of Mihai, however, I would say what he's, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mihai, but what you're more articulating is not boredom as much as it is the end of the pursuit. The existentialist, in an effort to be able to be in personal relationship, eventually stops the pursuit. So that there isn't that tension, there isn't that concern. In Heideggerian terms, Dasein becomes docile and ensnared in the relationship versus seeing that as a conduit of pursuit of meaning and purpose.
Perhaps, though I do take Kira's point that maybe there are ways of taking that pursuit that aren't necessarily engaging in the kind of discussion that we are having now. Like, there are ways perhaps of engaging in that pursuit and learning from people that don't involve the same communication strategies. So I do take what you're saying, Kira. Though I was just speaking from personal experience, I don't know if I'm the type that easily, you know, it definitely is there's a tension there when you're around people that don't seem to mesh in that way in terms of how you're seeing the world and how your worldview is. And so, again, that could be a me thing, though I'm not convinced that it's not also influenced by the existentialist mindset. So maybe it's layered there.
Yeah, I think that if I was to step into Sartre's shoes or Heidegger's shoes, because I'm more well-versed in Heidegger's shoes, he would probably say, at least the being in time version, he would probably say, well, why would you even attempt to be in a relationship with someone who wasn't similar in that kind of foundational pursuit? And maybe it's because I am a philosopher, but I'm also a philosophical marshmallow, in the sense that I wouldn't want to outright say existentialists can't be in relation to non-existentialists, but I do agree with my colleagues that there is a certain level of difficulty that can't. And that is a challenge. Go ahead, Hale.
Yeah, I was just going to kind of echo what Kira had to say. It was a very similar line of thinking. I think that the discussion so far kind of brings up one of the ironies of existentialism. And especially if I'm being frank, the kind of hardcore classic existentialism of someone like Sartre, which really emphasizes the sort of individual experience and all this kind of stuff, in that, you know, counterposed against someone like Heidegger or even Kierkegaard or whoever, you know, what was I going to ask? sorry, my mind escaped me for a second. Basically, the harder you try to be super authentic and individuated and self-understanding, the more difficult it becomes to actually have these personal relationships that necessitate that kind of authentic sense of being, right? And that's why people like, you know, hide it, you know, whereas you've got Sartre and individuals like that, who, you know, famously claim things like, you know, hell is other people and such, you know, when you look more at the almost more phenomenological side of existentialism, at the end of the day, it's about being, it's more of an observational note on about being involved in close relationships. And it's almost taken for granted that that's something that just people do. But when you, it's kind of like doing any, following any other pursuit or passion or whatever. You know, if I'm trying to learn how to play guitar or playing guitar, if I'm actually there in the relation doing the thing, that's about as close as I'm going to get. But the second I start analyzing it and trying to take a step back and have a second order perspective on what I'm doing, I start to actually lose the process, which is why, like, you know, I think sometimes it kind of turns back on us when you'd ultimately try and have this really overly philosophical existential mindset and then step into relationships and stuff with individuals. That process seems a lot harder than it might actually need to be. Which is, in a related note, especially thinking about someone like Heidegger for a second, which is why Heidegger was quite openly thought of philosophy itself as being kind of an anemic pursuit, and that, like, life is better found and understood in, you know, emphasis on things like art and communal relationships and stuff like that, because that's where, you know, that authenticity is actually found, not in effectively talking and analyzing it. Which is a roundabout way of saying what you guys have already been talking about.
I think being a traditional existentialist is hard. And it's hard for the reason that you have to examine who you are and why you are that way. The understanding of experience, experience shaping your very being is hard to understand. What Hale brought up that I want to touch on a little bit is Heidegger is a very interesting fellow. And yes, there is the Heideggerian controversy, which I addressed a couple shows ago. But Heidegger, after he writes Being in Time, which is the work he's best known for, there is a turn in his writing that brings about a far more poetic, a far gentler Heidegger in some of his writings, thinking particularly of the pathway. And I think that's the kind of existentialist slash phenomenologist that I try to be. That yes, there is that need to be asking yourself the question, who am I and what am I living for? What am I moving toward? But there's also that question, which should be at the heart of every existentialist in the pursuit of authenticity, that in your pursuit of authenticity, that should come so naturally that people see that and you can help them along the journey. I don't ascribe to the Sartrean idea of existentialism that says, we're on our own, guys, see you later. Because Sartre also talks about the human condition. The whole point of existential thought is to try to make sense of the human condition and journey together to make something better. Right? This is why Brandon and I talked about in a show about Socrates actually being the earliest existentialist. Because he says at one point in the Republic, he says, justice is doing one's own work. Why? Because when you do your own work and you master that, you're not just helping yourself, you're helping the community around you. Because they have someone they can go to get their shoes fixed. Right? They have people they can consult with and do things with. And yes, of course, I'm not saying don't do introspection. That's not what I'm saying. I wrote a whole thesis project on that topic. But what I am saying is in my own existential journey, which I write about in my thesis, I talk about the need to understand who I am in relation to other people. Because if I don't understand how other people see me, it's incredibly difficult to do any kind of introspection. Because it's actually in seeing how other people see me that I have greater knowledge of myself. Because I understand how I'm perceived. The trick here is, how do I reconcile the existential heavyweights with the philosophical marshmallow of me and my desire to journey with people and encourage people and help people? I would say that we're roughly at the half an hour point. I would say that this is the Canadian Philosophy Show, and I am so happy to have you with us. We're having a very difficult conversation about existential thought and relationships, personal relationships, and the similarity, but also the conflict of what is that in individuation and the pursuit of relationship. And I think one existentialist that can help us with that is Martin Buber. But before I transition over there, we're going to zoom on over to Mihai Kalbasser for his thoughts.
Yeah, so I was just thinking about what you were saying and what Hale said earlier about overcomplicating the process in a sense, maybe losing the forest for the trees as far as engaging in relationships goes. But here's my question. If you're trying to find out the most about yourself and the most about yourself in your, let's say, purest, most natural form, are you not hindered by throwing in all the extra elements that are other people? So put simply, how can you find out the most about yourself while being amidst all of the web of relationships that you live in every day? To give an analogy, it's like, if I'm going to, for example, work on myself physically, if I go and start comparing myself to all the people that are in the gym that I'm going to, that's going to create a different perspective on what I'm actually like and what I need to be working on than if I just really sat with myself and thought about that on my own terms. So I think the same goes with like changing yourself mentally and intellectually and philosophically. And that's why I wonder if maybe that's what some of these philosophers are getting at, like the ones we talked about, like Kierkegaard and others, when they say go it on your own, right?
But your favorite guy Kierkegaard would also talk about the need for the leap of faith, right? The moment where one finds community outside of himself, primarily with the divine, which is why I was going to bring Buber into this. But before we do that, we're going to swing on over to Hale Rothery for his insights.
Yeah, I think, you know, you bring up a pretty good point, Mihai, which is, I think people, there's a sort of inauthenticity, a kind of phenomenologist would call it, kind of falling, which is you can get over involved in social relationships and kind of actively try to lose yourself in them and lose your pursuits. You know, the easy example is the socialite-esque person, whoever it might be, is just like the most obvious example, someone who just completely understands themselves in their own referential framework in terms of their social status, social relations, all that kind of stuff. I think, like, at a more basic level, though, there's this real, the way I think about it, at least, is the real metaphysical crux or core is there an individual self who I'm trying to find, seek, understand, that is actually somehow separate from other people? Or am I also, is fundamentally part of who I am at my core, the self, whatever that it means, that, thorny topic, is a component of that, or perhaps all of that in some way relational to other people, right? And the example I think of is if you take the super